Good afternoon.
It's
good to see you. Good to be here. I know we're a little fewer in number than usual, but I'm glad you've chosen to be here. And again, our prayers and thoughts for all those who are traveling or those who are feeling unwell and not able to be with us. Tonight, I'm going to look at a passage in just a little bit in 2 Timothy chapter 2. I was thinking about this passage in Ephesians chapter 6 and preparing my thoughts and what Paul was trying to say to the Ephesian church. He says in Ephesians 6, beginning at verse 10, he says, "Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand." As a child of God, I understand something, and Paul is trying to get this over to this thought, this idea across to his readers as well, is that the battle that we are in as soldiers of Christ, and we just sang that wonderful hymn about being a soldier of Christ, we understand that what we fight against is not of a physical nature, but it's something that is internal in all of us. You know, Paul says, writes to the Romans in Romans chapter 7. He writes about that internal conflict that's going on within his own mind and ours as well. And what we're doing as Christians, as fellow believers in Christ, is that we are warring against something that in some ways is beyond our understanding. But one thing we can understand is we know the battle that goes on within our own mind and heart. James makes it clear in his letter that when we sin, when we're drawn away and enticed, we are enticed by our own lust. So the battle we fight is not outside, it's not with someone else, but it is with ourselves and with our fleshly nature warring against our spiritual nature. Now Satan, and a few months ago we looked at Satan and what he does, and he is the tempter, and as Peter describes him in 1 Peter chapter 5, he is that lion who would love nothing more than to devour us. But Satan only has the power over us that we allow him. He doesn't have any supernatural ability to make us sin or to do what we know we shouldn't. And so that's why James reminds his readers, the war that you're really fighting is an internal war, and eternal, I guess. Well, not really. One day it will come to an end, right? But it's an internal war. It's inside of us. And so tonight, I want to spend just a little bit of time thinking about this battle that we're all a part of. And so I want to spend some time looking at this passage in 2 Timothy, Paul's second letter. Now, when we consider the overall context of what Paul has to say to Timothy, there's a lot that Paul talks about. One of the things, though, is this battle against Satan, this battle against Satan coming against the church. And as he puts it here, in his second letter, against him, Timothy himself. And so Paul is trying to encourage and exhort Timothy to stand strong. Now, Satan's going to use all kinds of attacks against the church. One of the ones that are pretty prevalent in his writings is false teachers. But Satan will use everything at his disposal, and so he's encouraging him to stand strong. I want to notice the context here. If you will, let's read together this text. 2 Timothy chapter 2, 1 through 4. Paul writes, "You therefore, my son, Be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. And the things that you have heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. You therefore must endure hardship as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No one engaged in warfare entangles himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who enlisted him as a soldier. And so Paul, in his writing, is very good at using illustrations, right? And he'll try to illustrate his point in a lot of varying ways. He'll use farming. He'll use athletic events. He'll use all these different things. And the thing he alludes here to is the idea of a soldier. Now, I've never been in the military. I kind of hope I don't ever have to be. I am so thankful for those who bravely take that on in their lives, who are willing to do that. And as we mentioned this morning, we'll honor those who've given their lives in service to our country. And we'll honor those who've done so and who are with us even to this day and a part of our congregation who've sacrificed so much for us. But that I've never been there. Right, I've never been in the bunker, if you will, as we use that phrase. I've never faced down weapons pointed at me. I can imagine maybe what that's like, but I've never been there. I don't know really what you felt if you were in that moment, what that must feel like, and the courage that must be deep down inside of you to go and face that and continue on. That's amazing to me. But you think about soldiers and what they do and this sense of or need to protect, this need to strive against an enemy. One of the things you notice here is Paul doesn't tell Timothy that his enemy's people, right? As a good soldier of Christ, I'm not trying to fight you. I'm not trying to fight the guy down the street or my neighbor. He's not my enemy. My enemy is Satan and sin, right? It's evil. That's what we're trying to fight against. And so for just a few minutes, I want to use Paul's illustration here to make some important, or to bring out some of the important things that Paul says here, that as a good soldier of Christ, you and I should keep in mind. And so we'll spend just a few minutes on these. But the first thing I want you to notice comes in verse 2. Notice again there what he says in verse 2. He says, "And the things that you have heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." One of the first things we need to remember as Christians is that we're not in this alone. We're not lone wolves, but as people, we need the pack. We need the church. Now, I know there's some people who feel like they can make it on their own, but the reality is that's just not who we are as human beings. We need each other. We need support. Now, and I realize too, God is our ultimate support. He is our ultimate comforter. But we also need human support. We need brothers and sisters who will support us. You know, Solomon, a long time ago, in his writing of wisdom in Ecclesiastes, wrote about this. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, he says, "Two are better than one." Ecclesiastes 4 and verse 9. "Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion, but woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up. Again, if two lie down together, they will keep warm, but how can one be warm alone? Though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken." You notice some of the things that Solomon brings out here is that First, he mentions that when you have two working together, they have a better reward than one alone. What's his point is, well, two can get more done than one can. You may, or I may, at times when I feel like I can do it all by myself, but man, you ever try to do something hard and try to do it alone and then somebody comes to help you, don't you get so much more done? Now, I'm talking about when the help is helpful. I know there are times when people try to help and it's not as helpful. But when you've got two working at the same goal and putting forth the same energy into that goal, there's so much more that two can get done than one can. He says, if one falls, the other one will lift him up. There's somebody there to grab me and to pick me back up. Now, but if I'm out there by myself and I'm a lone wolf and I fall, well, I ain't got anybody around me. Just read a story. I didn't get into it real deep, but this young lady who was lost in Hawaii, and I don't remember, it's like 4 days, I think she was out there. 7 days. It was a week. She was out there in the woods by herself. People who can do that astound me. She has a lot of willpower to do that. Thankfully, she's been saved. But so often the case is when you have one person go off like that and they get lost or get hurt, so many times we never hear about them again. Why? Because there's no one there to pick them up. As a child of God, if I cut off all of the support in my life and I try to do it alone, when I fall down, who's going to be there to pick me up again? We need others. He says again in verse 11, if two lie down, they will keep warm, but how can one be warm alone? That companionship, that support, that empathy that we seek after. Though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him. And then he ends it by saying, a threefold cord is not quickly broken. That threefold cord is stronger than three individual cords. But wrapped together and entwined together, they give more support, strength to that rope. Us together can get so much more done. And us together can hold together much stronger and tighter. That's why Paul says to the Galatians in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 2, he says, bear one another's burdens. And notice this at the end, don't leave this off, and so fulfill the law of Christ. You know, we all claim to be Christians who have been baptized, right? And so our desire should be to fulfill the law of Christ. Well, Paul's point here is if we're not bearing one another's burdens, if we're not reaching out and supporting one another, then are we really fulfilling the law of Christ? Answer to that would be no. But part of our mission as Christians is to be there for one another, to support one another. The other side of the coin is also true though, right? If I'm the lone wolf and I don't ever let people know the burdens I bear, and the fault really lies with me, doesn't it? Because I'm not allowing others to help me bear those burdens. That's why James says in James 5 and verse 16, confess your trespasses to one another, pray for one another that you may be healed. The effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. Now, I know he's talking about directly sin, but that would apply to any kind of burden we bear, isn't it? Do we have that kind of relationship with the church? Paul writes to the Ephesians in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 32, and be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God in Christ Jesus forgave you. That's the kind of attitude we need to have with one another, to have that tender heart, to be able to be affected by the lives and the burdens others bear, to be able to support one another and to be there for one another. Don't let Satan convince you that you can fight it alone. Number two, we also note there in verse 3, he says, you therefore must endure hardship as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. Don't let Satan convince you that hardships are more important than keeping on fighting. Don't let the hardships of life keep you out of the fight. Paul will tell Timothy a couple chapters later in 2 Timothy 4 and verse 5, "Be watchful in all things, endure affliction, do the work of an evangelist, fulfill your ministry." One of the things Timothy needed to do in order to fulfill the call God had given him was to endure affliction. Paul knew all too well what that meant. But as human beings, we understand hardship. We understand affliction. We don't have to live very long to understand what Job means in Job 14 when he prays to God and he says, "Man is born of a woman, is man who is born of woman is a few days and full of trouble. He comes forth like a flower and fades away. He flees like a shadow and does not continue." Job knew what it meant to suffer hardship. And what's interesting about Job is that he suffered for doing nothing wrong. But Satan used that as a trick to try to get Job to quit, to get Job to curse God and die. You know, one of the things I've always seen about the story of Job and it puzzled me, and in some ways it's tough, is Satan even uses his own wife against him. When his wife comes to him and he says, "Why don't you just curse God and die?" You know, Job was a man who was hard-pressed on all sides. There he is sitting sitting down on the ground and taking that broken pottery, and he's just knocking the boils off his skin. You know, it's a tough image. And then his wife says that to him. Well, what if Job was just to quit? What if he did listen to her advice? The story would have turned out much differently, wouldn't it? James uses this illustration of Job in his letter, James chapter 5, beginning at verse 10. He says, "My brethren, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord as an example of suffering and patience," or long-suffering. "Indeed, we count them blessed who endure. Have you heard of the perseverance of Job and seen the end intended by the Lord, that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful?" If Job had taken the short view of things and looked at his life in the moment he lived, you know, he had every reason from a human wisdom to give up. If he only saw the moment that he lived in as the only moment and didn't look at the long view of things, his story would have turned out very differently. But because Job endured, he persevered, he was able to be greatly rewarded in the end by God. But it was by his perseverance that allowed that to happen. You know, in the midst of trouble and hardship, it can be very tempting to give up and to quit fighting. Well, those are the moments we need to fight harder. We need to struggle more. We need to rely more upon God and upon others around us. That doesn't mean hardships are easy and suffering is easy. What Job was going through was real pain, real agony. And for those who've suffered much in their lives, you understand that. But what we look at is not the short term. We're not looking for momentary relief, but we're looking for an eternal relief. And that's why we fight on. And then finally, we look at verse 4. Notice again with me, 2 Timothy 2:4. "No one engaged in warfare entangles himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who enlisted him as a soldier." Don't let the world distract you from your fight. This closely relates to our last ideal there, but we've got to fight the good fight. In his first letter, Paul wrote to Timothy in chapter 6 and verse 12 to fight the good fight of faith. We've got to fight. But to fight means I'm focused on the fight and not on everything else in my life. You think about the struggle it is sometimes to just stay focused. One of the things we mentioned and looked at this morning is during the Lord's Supper, I don't know if you ever struggle with this, I do at times, is focusing on what we're doing. It's so hard sometimes when somebody's saying a prayer and I'm trying to listen. Those are great moments for my mind or for Satan to get in there and give that little temptation to think about something else and to consider what else is going on in my life. What are my kids doing? And y'all need to be quiet. Or what are we going to do afterwards? What's going on this week? And it takes our attention away from where it should be. We need to be careful that we don't allow Satan to allow us or the world to take our focus away from where it should be. And that's especially true when things get difficult, when we're in the midst of the fight. In 2 Timothy, here a little bit later in the same letter, chapter 4, Paul is giving some of his final greetings and words of encouragement and just get providing some information. And often he talks about the people who are with him and the people, maybe if he knows some people where he's writing to, he may make special mention of them. And it's interesting, and this kind of gets just thrown in that list. In 2 Timothy 4 and verse 10, verse 9, he tells Timothy, be diligent to come to me quickly. Paul was in need. Well, why was he in need? Well, we learned that in verse 10, that there was another man who was with him named Demas. And we've read about him in other letters and other texts. But what Paul lets us know here in the second letter to Timothy, he says, for Demas has forsaken me, why? Having loved this present world. Now, we're not told exactly what that means. That's just kind of an overall idea that there was for some reason, Demas decided he had had enough of traveling with Paul, of dealing with the afflictions that Paul had to deal with the hassles that Paul had to deal with. And he decided, I want to do something different. And he left Paul. And so now Paul is in need. Demas is afflicted with something that a lot of us get afflicted with at times in our lives, and that's, I want to do something different. Or the world distracts me from what's really important. John says in his first epistle, 1 John chapter 2, verse 15, do not love the world or the things in the world. Well, that's what Demas was doing, right? He had fallen in love with the world. Again, and he'd left Paul, he'd forsaken him. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, it is not of the Father, but is of the world. The world is passing away, and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever. As a child of God, I've got a decision to make. I've got many decisions to make about what's most important to me. And it's an ongoing choice and decision. When you became a Christian, you made the decision you wanted to be a child of God. You wanted to be saved. Okay. And we're thankful we do that, right? And we're thankful we have that opportunity. But that's not the end of it. The fight continues. The fight has really just begun. And so Satan and our own inner flesh or outward flesh is going to continue to war against us. And we're going to have to make that decision every day. Today I'm choosing God. I'm choosing Christ over the world. And the world's going to throw all kinds of things at us. And we're going to have to continue to make that decision. What do we treasure most in our lives? What's most important to us? Demas, unfortunately, at that time in his life, what became more important was the world. His Christianity became secondary. His fight had become secondary. What do we treasure the most? Jesus says in Matthew 6:19 that we should not lay up for ourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust and where thieves break in and steal. Where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys nor thieves break. Do not break in and steal. For where your heart or for sorry, let's say it again. For where your treasury is, there your heart will be also. What do we treasure most in our lives? And again, that's a decision we make every day. And that changes throughout our lives. And Satan's going to throw up new traps against us. He's going to show us new shiny things. Will we continue to commit ourselves each day to the fight? Will we focus on that? Or are those other things becoming more alluring to us? What do we treasure? Tonight, I close with this question. Paul told Timothy to be a good soldier of Christ. Tonight, the same question really applies to us. Are we a good soldier of Christ? Even as a child of God, I can give that up. And I can do like Demas and I can leave Christ. With the charge and encouragement of Scripture and of Paul and all of us is that you won't give in. That you'll keep on fighting. That you'll continue to make that decision to fight. To fight for Christ, to fight the good fight of faith. Tonight, as you consider your life and where you are, as a Christian, are you still fighting? Do you still treasure God more than life? More than the things of life? Are you still fighting? If not, why? And Jesus points out to us all those things that Satan puts before us, all those temptations. Those are all fleeting. They're all vanishing. Why would you exchange your soul for any of those things? As a child of God that maybe has fallen away, let me encourage you, exhort you, if you need it, if you're lost in sin again, to come forward, to ask for forgiveness. We'll pray with you and for you. If you're not a child of God and you're not fighting the good fight, why not? If you need to obey the gospel, we want to provide that opportunity to you as well. Whatever your need, please come as together we stand and sing.